This is What's It Like with Dr. Ken Tangen.
Hi, this is Ken Tangen, and this is episode 50 of What's It Like. My guest is Tim Conley, marketing guru. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Ken. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are things in... Well, you know, you took a you're out of... Where are you now?
I'm in Vermont, and I came up here for a vacation to hang out with a very good friend of mine, and I'm from Phoenix, but I'm kind of a nomad. I've lived, you know, pretty much all around the United States and a couple places in the world.
Wow. No wonder it's hard to keep track of you. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in southern Illinois, in a really tiny town called Elkville, which hasn't had elk in it since, I think, when they named it.
I should know Elkville for some reason. It sticks in my mind, but I don't know why.
It's a little town near Carbondale, Illinois, where there's a university, Southern Illinois University.
That might be it.
And that's about all the fame it's got.
Did you come from a large family?
No, just I have one brother and just my parents, and they're still kicking about. And my brother actually still lives in the same town. He lives right next door to my parents.
Wow. Do you remember what your favorite childhood possession was?
Oh, gosh. It was a plastic army tank. It was my favorite. You know, I had G.I. Joes and I had Star Wars toys and all that stuff back in the late 70s, and had all that stuff. But my favorite was this cheap little plastic army toy. It went along with my little, you know, the little army men. And that tank was my favorite.
So when you were growing up, who had the greatest influence on your life?
I would say my mom. She had a huge influence on me in my very early years. I grew up in a rural town. Literally a half a block away was the start of a cornfield, and even to this day, all these years later, that's a half a block from my parents' house the cornfield still starts, and so the town hasn't gotten much bigger in all those years. And so I spent a lot of time there, just being raised there, running around the town with other kids my age. But my mom had like the biggest influence on me, just because she was around. Being the 70s, that was a time when moms were starting to move out of the house, and mine was still around for the most part. When we got a little older, she started like a part time job, but. For my early years, she was the one who was always around.
What was the major challenge you had as a child?
We were poor. Mm. So a lot of things were a challenge. Mm-hmm. We grew up in this, the four of us, my parents and my brother and I, we lived in a tiny little trailer, and it was just... It's almost really hard to describe just how small it was. And we, we had the struggles of, okay, what are we going to eat today kind of thing. So I had those kind of issues as a kid. Mm-hmm. It had a huge influence on me. I got into making money, when I was really young. My earliest memories of trading for profit. I was 5 years old. Hmm. So I started then, because I figured if I wanted something, I needed to be able to do it myself.
Mm-hmm. What childhood experience do you think contributed most to who you are today?
I don't know that I could pick like one childhood experience. I had like that whole Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn kind of childhood. Where I grew up, in Mississippi and the Ohio rivers aren't that far away. I ran around barefoot most of the summers, ripped up jeans and a T-shirt, just a little ragamuffin of a kid. So, I had kind of a really idyllic life outside of the, you know, the being poor, you know, you know, I actually responded more towards like watching The Little Rascals, because, you know, those kids looked a lot like me. And so but there wasn't anything that I felt was like really defining as a kid. I just kind of had this notion that the world was much bigger than what I was being allowed to see, being out in this rural area. And I knew that somewhere out there was going to be my life, and it wasn't going to be where I was. And I, you know, I just had that as a vague notion of myself, but there wasn't like any, I couldn't really point to any childhood defining moment.
How did you get out of the town, if that's the right way to put it?
I joined the military to travel. I joined the Air Force, and that was a huge mistake, mistake for me and a huge mistake for the Air Force. We just weren't a fit. I had gotten a scholarship to go to college, but I was just done with school, and I didn't really have a concept that I could have just gone around the world by myself at the time. I didn't really even think that was a possibility. I had never read any travel logs. I'd never, the only people that I had ever known of that had gone to, you know, backpacking in Europe all came from, you know, middle class and upper families. So I didn't think that was a possibility. So I knew that supposedly the military would send you around the world. And I joined the Air Force, and they sent me for training in Texas. And I stayed in Texas for several months, and then from Texas they sent me to Arizona. And
I thought you were going to say Illinois.
No. Thankfully, it wasn't back to Illinois. That would have been tragic. But they sent me to Arizona, and I spent my military time in Arizona, and so I just spent my own money. And taking, you know, they have very good vacation in the military, you know, 30 days of leave plus holidays and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I would patch my vacation time together with my, long holiday weekends. I'd like patch them all together so I could get as much time away from the military as I could. And I would take that and go abroad. I'd, you know, go visit things. Germany was a favorite place. So I spent my own money to do my traveling, even though I joined the military so that they would send me around the world.
Mm-hmm. So, Tim, what exactly do you do?
Oh, gosh. I've been a marketing consultant for a long time, but I'm also a serial entrepreneur. I get into anything that I find interesting. I've owned a swimming pool company, a remodeling and service company. I had that for a while. I built it up over a 4-year period, and then sold it off piece by piece. And I've done that. I've been in the internet marketing world for a very long time, helping when I lived in the Northwest. I used to live in Portland. I worked with quite a few software companies back in the day. And, you know, I was a part of I got to be a small part of that whole .com rise and fall of the late 90s. Then I got into consulting. I started consulting essentially because I had failed so dramatically, and other people started asking me how not to do what I did. and that got me into consulting, and I just took that and started learning more and more about business, and I just can't keep my hands out of like new ventures. And so every so often I start something new. Currently, I'm doing a podcast called The Foolish Adventure Show, which is about how to make a business online, and, you know, well, focusing it online. I'm not strictly – I don't believe in a strict online business. I mean, business is business no matter where you're at and how you do it. So I do that, and we have a small membership site that goes along with Foolish Adventure. And I'm not trying to plug it or anything, but that's what I do. I help the people in that membership site, and do a lot of consulting with them. And so it's been a lot of fun. And I've got a few things on my drawing board that are going to be coming out in the next few months, but I don't want to, like, you know, spoil the launch.
So is it possible to make money on the web?
I think it's one of the easiest ways to make money is to get online. You know, I've had the experience of being that 5-year-old kid, you know, buying and selling Matchbox cars and G.I. Joes and sticks of gum from the store. You know, I've gone from that to being able to make a sale to somebody somewhere in the world that I've never met and probably will never meet and may not even correspond with. So it's, I think it's a great place for people to take advantage of. The internet has been commercially viable for about 16 years, and a lot of people still treat it as if it's a brand new thing. But that's, you know, 15 years, that's nearly a career.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
and I've been a part of it for the last 13 plus years.
Isn't it hard to get found on the web?
It's getting harder because more and more people are coming on. Mm-hmm. It's not like a magic bullet. There are no magic bullets. Business is hard work. It's a lot harder work than having a job. You know, a job, you have your defined tasks. You know, these are the things that you're supposed to do. When you have your own business, well, you have to define everything that you do, and you have to be the one who drives things forward. You can't just, you know, clock out at the end of the week and call it good, because it's up to you to make a success out of your business. And getting found online, it can be difficult, but it's not impossible. And you just need to find your way of engaging with people online. Some do it through search engine optimization. Some do it through social media. Some do it through blogging. But, you know, you've got to find your way to engage with your potential market online, and that's going to be the thing that will help you get found.
What's the best thing about your job?
The people I get to work with,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of a. I hate that whole ADD thing. I was diagnosed as a kid as hyperactive. So before they started calling kids like me ADD. So I love just diversity. So when I get to work with people who are in all kinds of fields, I've worked from people who have had hardware or lumber companies to pool companies to the scrapbooking market, to software companies. I mean, I've worked through a whole gamut of industries, and the diversity of the people, that's the best part, is getting to see how people engage in their own business and being a small part of their success. That's the best part.
What's the worst thing about your job?
The business stuff, all the things that come along with having to run a business, government paperwork, numbers,
bookkeeping.
Bookkeeping, all of that stuff. Business would be so much better if all that stuff could just go away.
What type of person would be good at your job?
Someone who can engage in other people's success, because, you know, it's not all about you. Some businesses, you know, with the way I do things, I guess, you know, the type I am helping people grow their business. So I get joy out of their success, as opposed to trying to make myself feel like, oh, you know, I did this, I did that. I'm not that kind of person. I like kind of being behind the scenes. So I was kind of taken aback when you wanted to interview me, because I'd rather be behind the scenes and just, you know, helping someone else succeed. So someone who can truly enjoy the success of others, but the one catch there is not to be, I guess, so altruistic that you don't try to succeed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's that kind of personality, somebody who can find a balance between their own success and the success of others.
That's like being an agent, but you have to be willing to take your percentage.
Right, right.
If there is such a thing, what's a typical day like for you?
I don't know, kind of boring, actually. I get up in the morning, spend some time with my daughter, and then I play around on the internet trying to learn new things. I try to crank out some of the work that I have to do fairly early. For a night person, I'm also a morning person. So, but middle of the day, I'm pretty much a waste. So I have to try to get either everything done first thing in the morning or very late at night. Those are the two times I'm effective. The rest of the time, I'm not really worth much. So first thing in the morning, I try to get some of my work done. I try to create content for my members. I try to create content for marketing purposes. And then I spend time doing all that business stuff that you have to do just to keep a business running. And then I take the rest of the day off.
Oh.
So I'm usually good for about 4 hours, and then I'm done. After that, I'm not, like I said, afternoons I'm not really worth much, but late at night, then I'll get a creative burst and I'll start working at sometime around 10 o'clock at night. I'll start working again.
Tim will tell you what to do with your life right after I remind you of the importance of health. Let me take a moment to introduce you to a disorder that impacts a lot of people. In the UK, it's called ME, myalgic encephalopathy. In the US, it's called CFIDS, chronic fatigue and immune dysfunction syndrome. Whatever you call it, it's a chronic neurological disease of unknown cause and no known cure. Most every body system is impacted, including the musculoskeletal, immune, and central nervous systems. Symptoms include problems with vision, balance, coordination, pain, and sensitivity to cold, sound, and visceral stimulation. It screws up mitochondrial production and cellular metabolism or replication. For many, it's a totally disabling condition, and even for those patients who get better, it's a relapsing, remitting disease. Although it can occur at any age, it's mostly found in women in their 20s and 30s. My daughter has been sick with this condition since her junior year in college. This is a disorder that really needs more research. So go to cfids.org and donate. CFIDS.org. Thanks. So Tim, everybody has to give themselves motivation occasionally. How do you give yourself a kick in the pants?
Deadlines. I don't respond well when other people issue a deadline for me. That's why I'm an entrepreneur and not an employee. But for myself, I give myself deadlines. I guess you kind of have to. You got to create your own structure when you don't have anyone telling you what to do. Mm-hmm. So you create your own structure, and however someone else needs to do that. Personally, I create deadlines. And since I'm a marketing guy, my kind of deadlines are product launches. I define something that I want to get out into the market, either for a client or for myself. I get it out and I say, okay, I need to get this out in the market. If I give myself a long time to get this product ready to market, it strangely enough takes all that time. But if I shorten that time frame and I give myself a short launch, and strangely enough, I'm able to get it done then.
Let me turn the question around. When you have to soothe yourself, how do you calm yourself down?
I read. Read like nobody's business. I usually this year I'm reading slower than I normally have. I'm doing about one book every 2 weeks, but normally I do a book a week. And I've done this now for I don't know how many years, 15 or plus years, 20 years. I've read about a book a week.
Any particular genre?
I'm a nonfiction guy. I read tons of business books, read things in philosophy, read just anything that interests me. Biographies, if I see someone who's especially an autobiography of someone who I find interesting, not like celebrity stuff, but like usually business people or statesman or something like that, something that had a big impact on history, then I'll read that. I stay away from fiction, not because I don't like it, but because I find it highly addicting. So I will sit down and I will read to the detriment of my health and everything else. I will read it until I have finished the book.
Do you stay away from video games too for that reason?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I stay away from video games. There's only a few things that have ever been able to really shut my brain off. Mm-hmm. And it usually comes down to fiction, like reading fiction. Video games do it. Movies and TV don't. Strangely enough, my mind will go off on something else when watching a movie or television. But a book, I will be completely engrossed in the fiction. Same thing with video games. I will disappear in them, so I don't play them anymore.
Is there an event in your life that has challenged you to your core?
That's interesting. I think a few. At one point in my life, I fell off a mountain and had a that was a possibility that where I could have died. I fell about 70 feet and ended up with a broken ankle. Hmm. So I was quite happy about that.
Yes.
You know, the fact that that's all that came out of it. I'm technically disabled, but no one really notices. I'm able to walk around without any real problem.
A great story.
Right, you know, so you know that was something that that was the time when I learned I was mortal. Mm-hmm. You know, before youth has a way of making you feel immortal and that you're invincible, and I was that guy. I was a skateboarder, you know, so I would do tricks on half pipes and I'd had a bunch of concussions from that. I got into rock climbing. And then when I fell off the mountain from rock climbing, that point was a time when I realized that I was close to throwing off my mortal coil. I think that was a major impact, but it didn't really it shook a different part of my core. It was a thing of being able to look around the world and saying, okay, I've had a lot of fun so far, but now what am I going to do with myself? Mm. So it had that kind of defining moment.
Is there an idea or a principle that has helped you through your challenges?
This is going to sound pretty arrogant, but self-belief. I believe in myself. I believe in the power of humanity. We're intellectually the top creature on this planet, and that is knowing what's possible. Because you can look at history and you can see all the things that we as humans have accomplished, all the things that we're going to accomplish, and be able to look around and just see how amazing things really are. I internalize that and use that as my self-belief. Like if I want to do something, even if I have no idea how it's done, I will do it. I will do what's necessary to accomplish it. If I even from starting from zero, if I want something bad enough, I will actually accomplish it. And I don't doubt that I'm going to accomplish it.
If you were giving a commencement address for high school or college, giving your best advice, what would you say?
Don't follow other people's rules. Create your own. The name of my podcast is called Foolish Adventure, and it's called that because everyone else around you is going to call what you want in life foolish if they themselves don't want it. And mm-hmm. And that's something that you have to be courageous enough to stand up to all the people around you pointing at you, calling you a fool. And because you're not following their rules, they're going to call you a fool. because they want you to come into their comfort zone. And I say make your own rules. Most rules out there are designed to keep you from accomplishing what you want in life, not to keep you from harming yourself or harming others. They're designed to keep you in a box. And so I say make your own rules.
My last question is to help me get better at this process. Think of a defining moment in your life that we haven't talked about or something you wanted to say but haven't yet. What question should I have asked you to get you to tell me that story?
I don't know. I think you've asked some questions that most people don't ask me because I guess they stick around in the business world. You know, they don't get beyond that aspect of who I am. So I found it really interesting, some of the questions you asked. I think maybe a little more time, maybe going a little deeper into some things, because like defining moments, like I said, I had one kind, but then there are other kinds of defining moments. So like what were those other defining moments? I think that would be something.
So Tim, everyone has multiple defining moments in their life. What are some of yours?
One was when I was raised very religious. And this is something I've never talked about in public, just my closest friends. So you're going to get something out of me because I told you to ask me. I looked at the world and it didn't work the way I was told it worked from a religious standpoint, and that was soul crushing, I guess. Where I went from kind of being this true believer as a kid to looking at the world and saying, well, that doesn't make any sense compared to the way the world actually works. And I want to live a life that works, not one that I make up, not one that I make either fantasies or gods or rituals to live in, to replace the real world, but to actually live in the real world. And that occurred when I was in my teens, and I didn't want it to be true. So I fought against myself for probably 5 years before I finally realized, okay, I need to be me, and I really need to live in that real world. And instead of fighting against it, I need to enjoy who I am and start following my rules. As the advice I'd given, make your own rules. I finally started following my own rules.
So how are those rules different from the ones that you grew up with?
Because the big difference is that I learned something about the world is that there's very few things that are a good and very few things that are bad. Most things are neither. We define them as such. So when I had a daughter and raising her, I had to be very conscious of trying to say, oh, don't do that. That's bad. Well, it's not really bad. I just don't want her to do it. Or if it would hurt her, it's having an experience that has some pain involved in it isn't necessarily a bad thing because it teaches you to never do it again. But you don't want your child to get hurt. So you have to frame things in a way that it's not morally good or bad, but that it's physically good or bad. And that's, I think that's the big difference, is that I found that things are not, and I'm not a relativist. I don't believe that, you know, there is no such thing as good and bad. There really is. There are good things. There are bad things, but there's so few of them. And most of the rules in our lives, in our cultures, are all things that are human constructs. They're not good. They're not bad. They're neither. And if they help you in life, well, then enjoy that. If they don't help you in life, then stop following them. That's a major change that I've had from that.
I want to thank Tim Connolly for joining me today. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. It was a pleasure, Ken.